B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who once successfully convinced our receptionist that even par was a Swedish pop star, Charlie Nance.
Hey there, welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. And this being the last show of 2019, thought we'd wrap it up with some of my favorite 10 predictive questions for 2020 surveys with Kyle Porter, CBSSports.com's Eye on Golf, Ron Green Jr. from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, and Ryan Ballingy of TheGolfNewsNet.com. And we begin with Kyle Porter. Well, let's start with this. The last time we talked, you were fresh off your first television appearance on the Golf Channel. Have you received call number 2, 3, and 4?
I went back in... Yeah, I went twice this year.
Nice.
And some more plans in the future. So we'll see. It's a fun rotating cast of characters. It's something that, you know, I kind of stepped outside of my world a little bit to do that. And I had a lot of fun with it. It was definitely more fun and more intense than I thought it would be. So I'm hopeful to do it more in the future.
Everybody says that doing that show, we're talking about Morning Drive, that doing that show is more fun than you think it's going to be.
Oh yeah, it's great because I think people, or at least I, when I watch it, you get up there and you're like, okay, well these are just, I don't know, they're just like talking about golf, but there's really like 30 people in there and you're like talking with producers and everybody's got ideas and it's cool not just to talk about golf but to like make a show together, and I think that's the part that is really enticing for everybody that's on it.
All right, well, let's get started. 10 predictive questions for 2020. I always kick things off with the Tiger Woods question. Will Tiger break the tie with Sam Snead for career tour wins? And if so, does he do it before or after the Masters?
I've gone back and forth on that. I mean, if you had asked me this 6 weeks ago, I would have said no way. I mean, based on – he looked like an old man at, like, the BMW.
Oh, yeah.
The Northern Trust. I think he probably does. I'm going to say after the Masters, though.
I am, too. I got the feeling it takes him longer to get warmed up than usual.
Yeah. I mean, I could see it at, like, Memorial, right? Something mm-hmm. like that. I think that's pretty easy to envision. So, yeah, I'll say after the Masters, but I'll say he gets number 83 sometime this year next year.
Hey, which is more likely to happen first? Jordan Spieth wins again or... As volatile as these relationships can be, Jordan Spieth parts ways with caddy Michael Greller as eventually all caddies take the blame for lack of success.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. I think wins again. I mean, it's crazy. He had, I don't know the number off the top of my head, I think he had 3 or 4 top tens in 2019, which doesn't feel like it. I mean, I followed him at the PGA at Bethpage, and you're like, do you know where the middle of the club face is? Because I don't think you found it. And it was just, but he still finished T3. And you're like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of, the part that I feel worse for him about, he wasted kind of an all-time putting year. I mean, his putting this last season was better than it's ever been. Better than 15, better than 17 when he won the Open Championship. So, I don't know. If people are selling Spieth stock, I'm continuing to purchase it, and I'm just going to sit on it for the next five years, 10 years, 15 years. I might still be sitting when I'm like 50, but I'm going to own all of it for the rest of my career.
You know, I think you had an unbelievable tweet about 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. Of course, it's moot now because Ricky's been added to the President's Cup team, but it went something like this. If you'd have told me 2 years ago that there would be a President's Cup team in which Tiger Woods would be participating, but Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler would not, I'd have said you were crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. I mean, it's just... I don't know. It changes very quickly. I was looking at President's Cup. I was writing about the President's Cup yesterday, and I was pulling some photos to use. And I was like, oh, yeah, Daniel Berger was on the 17 President's Cup team. And it just
– wow. It's
crazy how quickly things change in both directions. And
yeah.
That's a good thing. That can be a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing for guys who can't maintain it.
Kyle Porter is CBSSports.com's Eye on Golf. He's our guest, taking Dead Aim 10 predictive questions for 2020. Last year, I asked if Brooks Koepka was more likely to build off his major championship success or have one of those chasing appearance fees hangover years we see so often. Obviously, he was outstanding. Number of majors Brooks wins this year, and I'll set the number at 1.5.
I'll go under. I think that the injury is kind of concerning, right? Like, I think, you know, I've seen it before. We saw it with the wrist a couple years ago in Hawaii. I think he finished, like, last in Hawaii, and you're like, by a lot. And you're like, what's going on? And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, he's injured. And then he's out through the Masters. And then, obviously, he goes on to win majors that year. But he's had some injury history. And I don't know. It's just we say it every time we talk, every time I talk to anybody. It's just hard to win majors.
Yeah.
And to expect somebody, I mean, I think even if you set it at a like 0.5, I think I would probably go under that as well. I just think it's going to be, and look, he shows up and it's awesome, but at some point it's going to go badly. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how he responds.
Even though Rory's not showing up again until Torrey Pines in late January, is it a foregone conclusion that Rory takes over number one from Brooks sooner rather than later?
Yeah, I think so. I think Rory's the best player in the world right now. I mean, I don't know anybody that would even really dispute that. I guess you could talk about John Rahm. John Rahm was awesome the second half of the year.
Yeah.
But Rory was the guy all year that accumulated the most OWGR points. He was, I mean, his strokes gained number was a joke. I don't know that got talked about enough. It was the best non-Tiger number ever, and we've been keeping this stuff since like 02, 03, something like that. So I just, his trajectory, he's got so much confidence right now. And look, he's going to have those weird Rory rounds. He's going to have the 78. It's going to happen at majors probably. It is what it is. But in terms of like, if you send everybody on the planet out to play a 100,000 hole tournament, like a simulation, he's going to win, and he's probably going to win by a lot.
Speaking of major championships, Augusta National, Harding Park for the PGA, Wingfoot, the West Course for the U.S. Open, and then Royal St. George's from the Open. Those are the sites for this year's major. So looking at that list, will we likely have more first-time winners or past major winners taking another?
That's a good question. I think I guess I'll say first time. I mean, there's so many guys. Like, I think Xander might win this year. I think Rahm might win this year. You know, Ricky, Cantlay. There's so many guys out there that haven't won one yet. It's not an elite major venues, in terms of courses. I thought 19, I mean, honestly, like 19 is as good as it gets, right? Augusta, Pebble, Port Rush and Bethpage. I mean, Bethpage is like your weak link. It's like, okay, that's pretty good. I don't know. I guess first timers, but it's hard. I mean, there's so many guys out there that haven't won a major championship. It's crazy. Tony Finau's won one tournament, and he's like one of the 13 best guys in the world. So, you know, Fleetwood, you can just go on and on. You could go on a three-year run of guys who haven't won a major, and none of it would be – it would all make sense. None of it would be out of the ordinary. So,
full disclosure, Kyle Porter is an enormous Oklahoma State supporter, and we're going to ask him to use his head and not his heart on this next question. Colin Morikawa, Victor Hovland, Matthew Wolf, all three were awesome this year. Which of the three is the first to win a major, and do you think it might happen this year?
I think it's going to be this is tough because I think – if you look at
the upset is if you say Morikawa.
I am. Well, Morikawa is the best. I think he's the best iron player. He might be the best tee to green. The problem is that Hovland is like by far the best driver, and that's the formula, right? That's the Koepka, the Rory,
right,
the DJ. I mean, if you look at his numbers, his strokes gained stuff from the second half of the year after he turned pro. His strokes gained off the tee, it was a Rory number. And it wasn't a small sample size. He played in, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 events. It wasn't enough to qualify in terms of the entire season, but it wasn't just like one tournament. He is elite off the tee. And those are the guys that I want to bet on, that I want to wager on, because if you get, you know, semi-hot putting one week, then that's a wrap because you're just so consistent off the tee. So I'll say Hovland. I actually would go Morikawa maybe over no, I can't do that.
Now you're not going to stop. Don't do that. I wouldn't believe you tried. Kyle Porter, CBSSports.com's Eye on Golf, our guest taking Dead Aim. 10 predictive questions for 2020. We've sort of touched on this briefly. John Rahm, Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele, and Bryson DeChambeau. Currently, those are the four in the top 10 overall world golf rankings that do not have a major on their resume. This year, one, some, or none breakthrough?
Who were they again? Rahm, DeChambeau, Cantlay, and Xander?
And Schauffele, yeah.
I'll say multiple. I'll say Xander and John Rahm.
Wow, going with two.
Yeah,
all right, great.
I think Xander might win the Masters.
You know, that's not going to surprise me. One of the things that I'm looking for out of this list, and I look back, I think it was 2 years ago, I asked a question, who would have a better career in the long run, Cantlay or Schauffele? And, you know, that's turned out to be kind of a push. I think they're both great in their own right. But people forget, Patrick Cantlay had the lead on his own as he walked off the 15th green at Augusta National last year. And I think that moment was just way too big for him, and I think he realized it on the 16th tee, when, oh my God, what am I doing here? But I really think that's the kind of guy, and later in the year he won a big tournament and he didn't, you know, fold in a big moment. I think that's the kind of guy that it would not surprise me to see Patrick Cantlay win a Masters or a major quickly. I just think he's got that makeup.
Yeah, I think he cares the right amount. And what I mean by that is you get into the Rory and Spieth thing sometimes. And I think sometimes they legit care too much about it. And I mean, that's a character quality that I admire in them, but it makes it, I think, sometimes problematic or difficult when you're coming down the stretch. And I think Cantlay is he's kind of a little DJ-ish of just whatever, man. It's not like they don't care, but they care an appropriate amount. And it's hard to teach that. And I think he's kind of got that in him.
As he's just fallen out of the top 50 for the first time in more than two decades, let's talk victories for Phil Mickelson this year on tour. And again, I'm going to set the number at 1.5.
I'll go under. I think it's fading fast for Phil. You know, I think he's going to have some weird magical moment at Augusta at some point in the next 10 years. But for everything else, I think it's going to be tough. Probably not going to be on a Ryder Cup team again. He's just, I mean, the thing that nobody's really talking about is the U.S. Open. He might have to, go, I mean, how's he going to get into it, you know? And not just this year, but for the next five or six. So that part of it's going to be interesting. But I just don't, it's just so hard to get it back after you're 50, and it's kind of going in the wrong direction for him. Also, I'm talking about somebody who won a tournament 9 months ago.
Yeah. So. Speaking of 50, and on a related note, he's going to turn 50 at the U.S. Open. So as sort of a side note, number of PGA Tour Champions majors that Phil plays in this year, and I'm going to set the number again at 1.5.
I would go under. He's not going to do that, is he?
Oh, I could see him showing up at Newport for the U.S. Senior Open. I could also see him hanging around an extra week overseas for the Senior British Open. But I would think at most it's those two. I don't see him chasing senior majors this year.
Yeah, I guess the U.S. Senior Open would be, I don't know. I just feel like he still sees that as a little beneath him with the level that he's playing at. But I don't know. I mean, you see, Stricker's quality. You got a lot. We're entering this era where you've got a lot of quality guys that are kind of doing both a little bit.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It will be interesting to see how you kind of, well, both him and Tiger handle that over the next 10 years.
Kyle Porter is CBSSports.com's Eye on Golf, our guest taking Dead Aim, 10 predictive questions for 2020. In 2016, all we heard about was how the Olympics weren't important and golfers were coming up with reasons and excuses not to play in it. This year, how big a deal is it going to be for the top players to openly pursue spots for their country's Olympic team?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think, you know, you're going to get, I think just more guys are going to go, right? Like, you're going to have.
I think so. I think everybody, I think Justin Rose, one of the best things that happened for the Olympics was Justin Rose to embrace winning that gold medal like he did and spending a year sticking it in everybody's face. And I think that it really sort of sparked the competitive juices in some of these guys. And if you think about it, Kyle, okay, you take the top four from whatever country. So you may not have the top 20 in the world, but you could have the top 20 who are able to qualify for their countries in the world playing at that. And you'd take that for any tournament in the world. And now it's for an Olympic gold medal. I think it has potential to be really, really a cool event.
Yeah, and I hope we swing more toward this, like, hey, the four majors aren't the only tournaments that matter, right? Like, the tournaments that matter wherever the best players show up.
Right.
And so if that's at the Zozo, then it's at the Zozo. If that's in Tokyo, then it's in Tokyo. I hope that the Olympics sort of opens us up to thinking about golf more that way instead of the, okay, these are the 16 rounds that matter. Everything else doesn't matter at all. And you're like, well, then what are we doing the other 48 weeks of the year?
KP, the drumbeats continue to get louder on this. In 2020, would you be more surprised if golf powers that be started to make moves towards bifurcation in terms of equipment, or more surprised if they didn't?
I would be more surprised if they didn't. But I don't know. It's like they take a baby step every 3 years, and so by, like, 2080, we'll arrive at bifurcation. You know, you and I won't be here anymore. My grandkids will be covering, you know, Rory's grandkids, and it's just not, I don't know. I feel like I've kind of bought into that every year, and I'm starting to say, like, no, I'm not. I refuse to believe that this year.
True or false, America takes back the Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits?
That's true. They're gonna roll. I shouldn't say that. Oklahoma State plays OU in college football this weekend, and I told a friend the other day that believing that Oklahoma State's going to win Bedlam against OU is like believing that the U.S. is going to win the Ryder Cup in Europe, because it's just not going to happen. But in the U.S., at Whistling Straits, I don't know. It's going to be fascinating. I can't wait. It's the thing I'm looking at. Tiger Woods defending the Masters in 2020, and I'm more looking forward to the Ryder Cup. It's going to be awesome. It is the best experience in golf. If people who are listening get a chance to go, do it. Do it over the Masters. Do it over the U.S. Open. Maybe not over the Masters, but do it over everything else. And it's just the best. I can't wait.
Get you out of here on this. A bonus question. Your surprise or gut prediction for anything in the world of golf in 2020?
Oh, that's a good one. I think Webb Simpson wins another major.
Wow, that's taking it deep.
So I think the way we think about Webb is like, oh, yeah, I was saying this on my podcast the other day. Oh yeah, Webb. Like he's a good dude, nice guy. Won the U.S. Open that one year. There was that Bird guy, you know, went to jail. And like, really, the thing we need to be saying is like, is this guy like one of the eight best guys in the world? I mean, the level at which he performed this year is it's unbelievable. He was so good, and he's ranked. I don't know what he's ranked. I think he's 11 or 10 or something like that. He was a go-to guy at the Ryder Cup last year. He beat Justin Rose in Paris. I mean, he is really, really good, and he's performing as well as he's ever performed. I wouldn't be surprised to see him win, I don't know, Harding Park, Wingfoot, something like that. I'm really intrigued by his next couple of years.
Well, you saw what happened when he gets the thing with Webb is ever since he had to ditch the belly putter was finding a new way to putt, and if he gets hot putting, he can do it to anybody anytime. I'll never forget the performance he put on at the TPC a couple of years ago. That was scary.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, there's a couple of stats out there. I don't have them off the top of my head, but when he gets hot and around, like, I don't know if anybody gets hotter. Like, he'll go like five birdies in seven holes, or like 10 birdies in 14 holes, and you're like, oh my gosh, like he just finds these heaters and he can't get off of them. So I'm really excited about his 2020. I think he's got a really fun two or three-year stretch.
He is CBSSports.com's Eye on Golf. That's my friend Kyle Porter. And when we return, our man from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, Ron Greenjinger, takes dead aim at the 2020 golf season with 10 predictive questions presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We are taking dead aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors, wrapping things up this week for 2019 and gazing into what could be in 2020 with some of the best of our 10 predictive question surveys and Ron Green Jr. for the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer.
All right, Ron, let's start with this. We traditionally start with a Tiger Woods question, and here we go. Will Tiger break the tie with Sam Snead for career tour wins this year? And if so, will he do it before or after the Masters?
Guess he will break that record. Davis Love last week actually said he thinks Tiger could win 100 tournaments. That's a big number.
That's a big number.
That's a very big number. But I think, yes, he will break Sam Snead's record. I think he will do it before the Masters. I'll say no because I don't know that he's going to play that very many times. And, of course, he picks the hard places. But, yes, he breaks Sam Snead's record, moves on past it, but I'll say not before the Masters.
Do you think we will see a time, maybe not this year or maybe at the end of the next year, but perhaps in future years, where Tiger, and you almost said it a minute ago, where Tiger alters the venues of his youth because they've just become big ballparks, and perhaps we see him do something crazy like add in a Hilton Head or something like that, a smaller golf course?
Well, to invoke Davis Love again, talking to him at RSM before the tournament last week, we got on that subject. He said, I'm always telling Tiger he should add Greensboro, he should add Colonial, he should add Hilton Head. His advantage would go up at those places. I think he might here and there add a spot, take a spot away. You know, but he loves playing those hard ones, Muirfield Village and Torrey Pines and places like that, that obviously for good reason. I mean, his track record at those places is good. I think if we see anything, I think it's, again, playing only a handful of tournaments, 12, 13 tournaments a year. So I don't see him adding a whole lot in that regard, but I've always thought he could go down to Hilton Head and put on a show.
Ron, this next question is sort of fun and gossipy and nefarious. Which is more likely to happen first? Jordan Spieth wins again, or Jordan Spieth parts ways with caddy Michael Greller, as eventually all caddies take the blame for lack of success?
I think Jordan Spieth wins again. I think he'll get it back there. I think he's working on it. I think player caddy relationships can be interesting, and you know, you look at Webb Simpson and Paul Tesori, or you look at what Bill and Bones were for so long, Joey and Tiger. I think Greller and Spieth, you know, while Greller's had to listen to a lot over the last year or so as Spieth sort of talked his way through this, you know, this downturn he's been going through, I think they stick together. I think if he'd wanted to make a change, he could have already done it. So, I think Spieth wins this year, or this coming year.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking dead aim. 10 golf predictive questions for 2020. Last year, I asked if Brooks Koepka was more likely to build off his major championship success or have that appearance-chasing fees hangover we see so often. Obviously, he was outstanding. Number of majors Brooks wins this year, and I'll set the number at 1.5.
Well, I'll take the under on that. I just hope he's healthy enough to play. I'm guessing he will be, but it's worrisome that he had the knee treatment and then re-injured and had the WD from the President's Cup. So it gives you that little sense of, okay, what's going on there? Is it more than we think? I just think as easy as he has made major championships look, and he has made it in the same way Tiger did, it just, you know, they just sort of fall to him, and he's always there. still winning them is really, really hard, as the last three demonstrated this year after he won that PGA. But I think he's got a good chance to win one this year. I wouldn't expect he'd win more than one, though.
Even though Rory is off and not playing till, I guess, late January, early February, according to his words, and Brooks is on the shelf, do you think Rory overtakes him for number one sooner rather than later?
Yeah. Now, don't make me get in any kind of math. They just used the word divisor in my eyes, sparkling over there with that whole formula. But I think so. I think Rory is intent on that. And, I don't know when we will see Brooks next. Rory's indicated he'll show up Torrey Pines in late January and go from there. So I don't know that we're going to have a whole lot of movement between now and then. Maybe something drops on or off, however that works. But I think Rory chases him down. I think Rory is, it's funny because you hear guys, all of whom have been number one in the world, with only a few exceptions, say once they've done that and once they've sort of fallen back, that is not a big goal for them. They've been there, sort of done that thing. Now, Jason Day has talked about wanting to climb that mountain again, and he's got a lot of climbing to do. But I think now that it's close enough, I think for Rory, it is sort of something out there he wants to try to chase down.
Let's look ahead to the major championships next year. Of course, Augusta National. Then we have the PGA at Harding Park in San Francisco, which I'm really looking forward to seeing, by the way. The West Course at Wingfoot for the U.S. Open and Royal St. George's for the Open Championship. Those are the sights of this year's majors. Do you think we will see more first-time winners or more past major champions taking another?
I could see it going, I'll split the middle, going 2-2. I'm going to be bullish and say Rory finally wins the Masters. And I think Tiger's going to win the PGA at Harding Park. Those are my two picks. Beyond that, I don't know. I think it's going to be hard for somebody. And Wingfoot's just downright hard. And then St. George's is sort of given us some quirky things in the past. So those might be the two first-timers. But I don't have it happen. There's some, guys who haven't won one. I mean, the Shoffleys and guys like that who you just sort of think are going to get one. Who knows, maybe Matt Kuchar gets the lifetime achievement major championship at St. George's or something. You wouldn't think of him as a guy who hadn't won one. You go back and look at what Gary Woodland and Shane Lowry did last year. Not the guys you may have immediately picked to win major championships, but really good players with, sort of deep, impressive pedigrees, and they finally got it. Yeah, I think I'll go 2-2.
2-2, solid push by Ron Green Jr. These are 10 predictive questions for 2020. Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer is our guest taking dead aim. Colin Morikawa, Victor Hovland, Matthew Wolf. Of the three, which do you think is the first to win a major, and do you think it happens this year?
I'm going to say it doesn't happen this year only because there are only four of them and they're so darn hard to win. So I just think playing the money line there, I think I would take that doesn't happen. I'm going to name one and it's just, I'll say Victor Hovland, but if you want to give me the other two, I'll be just as happy because I think they all have really, really good futures. I think it'll be interesting to see what they do this year because there was such sort of attention and fanfare and success for him in the latter part of last season that, we've all ratcheted up the expectations now that they should be there, that they should start collecting these trophies and all that. And I think we're going to see a good bit of that. Now, do all of them go through it and have no sort of sophomore slump? I'm sure some of them are going to go hot and cold, but I'll take Hovland right now.
Speaking of the majors, John Rahm, Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele, Bryson DeChambeau. Currently, these are four in the top 10 of the overall world golf rankings without a major on their resume. This year, will one, some, or none break through of those four?
Well, I've already said there's going to be two first-timers now. I think John Rahm has the best chance of doing it. I think just one of them does it, but I think it's Rahm.
I remember a couple of years ago, I had a question in our 10 predictive questions about Cantlay and Schauffele, which one was going to do better. Is it sort of a push at this point? Both of them have been great the last 2 years.
Yeah, I think so. I think, again, that's the whole thing. It's like when you're at a really good restaurant and everybody orders something different and, you love what you have, but you'd be happy taking whatever everybody else had, too. I think, you could give me one and... or you could pick first. I'd be happy with whichever one you gave me. I think they're both really good. You know, it's interesting. I think Shoffley has won some tournaments, but if I'm correct, I don't think he's won a full field event yet. Maybe I'm missing that. But, you know, Cantley, when he won at Muirfield Village last year, that was just sort of seemed like the next step in the process. But, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if either one of them got into March and having won one or two tournaments already.
Ron Green, Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim, 10 predictive questions for 2020. He's just fallen out of the top 50 for the first time in more than two decades. Victories for Phil Mickelson this year on tour, and again, I'm going to set the number at 1.5.
Under. I don't think Phil wins again on the PGA Tour. I think the more interesting thing to me is I think he turns 50 the week before the U.S. Senior Open.
It's so funny you bring that up because that's the addendum to my question. I have him turning 50 at the Open, and I was wondering how the number of PGA Tour Champions majors you think Phil plays in this year.
Well, I think it certainly is going to add to Newport Country Club if Phil shows up there immediately after celebrating his birthday and goes in. I'm not sure how many. I think Phil might play that one. That might be the only one he plays, though. I think he's so intent on the Ryder Cup that I'm going to give him none, only because I think he's only going to play one right there at the Senior Open.
Really? You can't see him sticking around for an extra week overseas and playing in the Senior Open?
He could. That would surprise me a little bit, though.
Wow.
Of course, what does he do better than anybody else?
Surprises. Ron, in 2016, all we heard was about how the Olympics weren't important and golfers were coming up with so many reasons and excuses not to play. This year, how big a deal will it be for the top players to openly pursue spots and talk about competing in the Olympics?
I think much bigger than it was 4 years ago. I think it was sort of a curiosity in 2016, and you know, then you throw in all the Zika and this and all the other things. I mean, it was a lot sort of stacked against it. But then once it happened, and I think people saw Justin Rose and Kuchar and Stenson posing with their various medals and getting a sense of what it meant, I think it's different. I think the fact that it's outside Tokyo this year versus where it was in Rio probably is more appealing to players. And it's a big deal. I mean, Tiger's talked about it. I think a lot of guys really want to go do that. That's and in the same way that winning the FedEx Cup was not a big deal 6 or 8 years ago, it's become a bigger deal and sort of a check mark on your career resume. I think the Olympic thing, because it's only every 4 years, because only very few players actually qualify for it, I think it's something that, yeah, I mean, if you're Tiger and you've won everything else, but you didn't get that one, you think, oh, man, I'd like to have that one. I think it's a big deal, and I think we'll hear more about it as once we get to the end of the summer, and, you know, with the majors sort of haven't had the Open Championship, and this year we didn't have any more majors there. Suddenly it was FedEx Cup time. We'll have this to go 2 weeks after the Open Championship. Then it'll be the FedEx Cup, and then it will be the Ryder Cup. So, you know, it's going to sort of keep a momentum going in professional golf through the end of September next year, whereas this year it sort of just quieted down immediately.
You know, and NBC has to be licking their chops. I mean, if you have the top 16 or top 20 professional golfers who qualify for the Olympics, if the 20 that can qualify do, and they're all competing, that's going to be a hell of a golf tournament to watch, and, you know, the TV ratings are going to be great for it.
I would think so. And I would guess they could get it somehow prime time-ish. They probably already got the time set. But, yeah, I think it's unique. And, you know, people love the Olympics. I don't know if it gets the viewership it did back in the day when I was a youngster, and it sort of just dwarfed everything. But I think it's become a big thing on the golf calendar. And, when you listen to Rory talk about it and you listen to Justin Rose talk about what it meant to him, I think that says all you need to know about it.
The drum beats for this continue to get louder to me. In 2020, would you be more surprised if golf's powers that be started to make moves toward bifurcation in terms of equipment, or more surprised if they didn't?
I think, maybe the second week of February, the RNA USGA distance report is coming out. I think that will affect that drumbeat one way or the other. I think my sense is we're going to see the ball continues to go greater and greater distances, and I think that's going to at least push the narrative toward bifurcation a little bit in terms of professional golf, changing what the pros do. So I think we might edge that way. I'm not sure we're going to see it anytime soon. I can't imagine we would see a wholesale rollback on driver heads or golf balls. So I don't know what the solution is. I just know that it's certainly changed the game like nothing else in the last little while. And, I agree. I think something needs to be done at the highest level. Television ratings may tell me otherwise. People like to see guys hit it 340 yards and all that. But I just think the game was better 25 years ago in a lot of ways than it is now. Not to say it isn't great now. I mean, it's thriving. It's hugely successful. But I think in terms of hitting shots and playing the game the way it sort of was imagined, I think I liked it better the other way.
Let's get our hearts out of this one straight with the head. True or false, America takes back the Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits?
Yeah, I think so. I think they need to. I mean, it's the old thing about not a rivalry if one team wins all the time. And we sort of felt like we'd gotten past that a little while ago. And that was a thorough whipping the Americans got in Paris. And while they were in fault in some ways, led to their own defeat with some of the play they had. I mean, Europeans were almost impossible to beat that week. They were so good. I mean, Molinari, Fleetwood, and all those guys. And I think, this would be a good one. I think it's, in some ways, it's not a terribly American golf course they're going to be playing at Whistling Straits. But I think it's, I don't know that there's a home course advantage, while though Steve Stricker will do everything in his power to make sure there is. I just think it's going to be a very, very good American team. And I think they get it done this time.
Which was a worse assault, what the American team endured in Paris or what your credit card endured in Paris by Mrs. Green?
Mrs. Green didn't get to make the Paris
at
the time. So, that would have been a good one. but Mrs. Green's already plotting for some Pebble Beach time this year, so I think we're trying to clear out a little cat space, as they say.
Oh, my. Get you out of here on this. Ron Green's here with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our 10 predictive questions for 2020. Bonus question here. Your surprise or gut prediction for anything in the world of golf in 2020?
That I will still be, the strength of my golf game will remain making bogey from the fairway with a wedge.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, that's frequent contributor to the show, Ron Green Jr. And up next, from thegolfnewsnet.com, Ryan Ballingy gives us his two cents as he takes dead aim at the 2020 season with 10 predictive questions. Presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors, and 10 predictive questions for 2020 with Ryan Ballingy of thegolfnewsnet.com. Ryan, I always like to start with a Tiger Woods question. This year's, will he break the tie with Sam Snead for career tour wins in 2020? And if so, does he do it before or after the Masters?
I think that he will, and I think that's just in part because he's playing pretty well. I mean, if you look at the last few seasons, he's got a win in each season, the Tour Championship, the Masters, and the Zozo Championship. So it seems stand to reason that he could win another one, and also because he tends to play the same events over and over again for a reason, because he wins at them and he likes playing them. So I think he'll pick up another one. I don't know that he'll do it before Augusta, just because he's going to play such a limited schedule before then that, he'll play Riviera, of course, because he's the host there, but he doesn't have a good record there. So I don't think he'll pick that off. And then you go into the Florida Swing, and Yeah, maybe. I mean, you're asking them to win, I guess, Bay Hill, which is certainly possible.
Bay Hill or the Players, or, you know.
Yeah, maybe the Players, but again, not the best record there. Just a couple of wins there,
right.
But it is a tournament that he does do every year. But I would think his best shot would be Bay Hill, so I'm going to say no, not before the Masters.
I don't know if he will actually play a Hogan-esque six-tournament schedule, but would you be surprised if in the future and in the present, you know, Tiger plays maybe 10 events?
I think it just boils down to what he feels his body needs to be both rested and for him to be competitive. And I think that's going to kind of boil down to feel just as much as anything. I mean, I think he has said a couple of times now he feels like he's got a hang of how his body reacts to this type of schedule, having done four surgeries. And he said he played too much in 2018 and that he paired that back in 2019. And now he's going to have to figure out, okay, well, if I pair it back, how do I get ready for the tournaments that count the most to me? And that's obviously the major championships. So I think that's going to be his challenge for 2020, in particular setting up for the PGA Championship, because after that Masters win, he looked like a guy who had no interest really in playing golf, and for good reason, by the way. It was totally fine that he didn't want to play golf, but he didn't seem all that interested in what was going on at Bethpage Black, and he got smoked by Brooks Koepka. But I think he can prepare for the other majors just as he always has. So, you know, maybe it's a 12-event schedule, maybe it's a 15-event schedule. I guess it kind of depends on how he feels, but I think it's, you know, in the low teens.
Ryan, which is more likely to happen first? This is sort of a mean question. Jordan Spieth wins again, or Jordan Spieth parts ways with Michael Greller because eventually all caddies take the blame for lack of success?
I hope that he wins again. I mean, I think Jordan Spieth is a good character for the game. I think he, by all accounts, seems like a decent person inside the ropes and manages a great image for himself. I don't know him personally well enough to say anything about him, but I hope that he is a part of the conversation. But he's playing tournaments like a guy who's been lost for the last couple of years. I mean, once we get to the summer, you know, and if we do get to the summer before he wins again, that's 3 years since his last win. That's a long time for a young guy who should be starting to enter the prime of his career. And instead he's working on this stuff with Cam McCormick that, you know, hasn't netted results yet. I mean, he's showed at times on Thursdays and Fridays that he can get into contention. And then throughout the weekend, he's basically the worst guy in the field. His scoring average on Saturday and Sunday on the PGA Tour is one of the worst on the PGA Tour. And if you want to take it into the realm of top 50 players, I'm almost certain it's the worst. So he's got to figure out something in his head at this point. And I don't know how easily you do that. So I hope that he wins first. I hope that the breakthrough is not that far away, but I kind of got a feeling that maybe Michael Greller won't be long for this, or Jordan Spieth won't be long for this relationship.
You know what's interesting about Spieth? I was talking with Kyle Porter with CBSSports.com not long ago, and he pointed this out. You know, he hasn't won in forever. His putting stats this last year were the best of his career. Mm-hmm. And in 2015, didn't you think Jordan Spieth made everything he looked at? And this last year, he was a better putter than in 2015. And that shows you how his long game has just gone to pot.
Yeah, if you look at his season this past season, I mean, I think it was three of his top four strokes gained putting rounds were recorded this year. And some of them were outrageous single round numbers. And that kind of buoyed his season. I mean, if it weren't for the putter, he would be way worse than 50th in the official world golf ranking. The one thing that's saving him from outside the top 50 right now is that third place finish at the PGA Championship, which almost kind of came out of nowhere, but it then set up these expectations that, okay, Spieth's back, he'll be fine. He's just working it all out. And then we never saw that again. And I think it does boil down to the good news is he's still got a putter that hasn't been messed up yet. He hasn't tried to do anything to screw that over. But the rest of his game is under so much pressure because he drives the ball so poorly that he has to basically be perfect in the rest of his game. And his iron play is just not where it was in that 2015 stretch. So not as much 16, but certainly 17, when he was an all-world iron player. And since it's not really there, there's just too much pressure on his game off the putting surface.
Ryan Ballingee with thegolfnewsnet.com is our guest, taking Dead Aim 10 predictive questions for 2020. Last year, I asked if Brooks Koepka was more likely to build off his major championship success or have that chasing appearance fees hangover that we see so often. Obviously, he was great. Number of majors Brooks wins this year, and I'm going to set the number at 1.5.
I think under 1.5. I mean, I think historically we're asking a lot of anybody if we want them to win more than a major a year.
I agree.
I just think that's too much.
Tiger spoiled us.
Yeah, he did. And I think that it's going to take us a long time. It's going to take golf fans a long time to kind of erase the specter of peak Tiger Woods and the expectations that come with being the best player in the world. And that's what Brooks Koepka is. He is the best player in the world. But the best player in the world after Tiger Woods' peak is not the best player in the world at Tiger Woods' peak. And so I think we have to look at the major venues. And you kind of see what lines up, just like we used to do with Tiger. And you look at his Masters record. He has basically gotten better every time he has played the Masters. His finish has improved every single time. So he's only got one place to go from here if that trend were to continue, since he was second this year. So he could win the Masters. I think he's figured out how to play Augusta National in a manner that works for him. If you look at the PGA Championship venue, it's TPC Harding Park, and the lasting memory that I have of that golf course, albeit it has changed in 14 years, is the WGC Amex, which resulted in a playoff between Tiger Woods and John Daly, two of the longest guys you can think of. And that was a tremendous event. And that leaderboard that week, it featured guys who hit the ball a long way and put it in play. That's Brooks Koepka, so I think he looks good there. The U.S. Open should be a really interesting venue this year because it is winged foot. It's going to be difficult. That's the whole calling card of having a U.S. Open there. And they set up Beth Page Black to be difficult, and he handled that just fine. I feel like those venues – I mean, the Open Championship feels like still something that Brooks hasn't acquired a taste for. So let's say three majors he's got a chance to win. He looks pretty good on all three of the venues. If he picks off one, that's a great year for anybody, but I think he'll get one.
Thanks for bringing up the major championship venues. You already mentioned them all: Augusta National, Harding Park, Wingfoot, the West Course, and Royal St. George's. Outside of Brooks Koepka, I guess, as you look at the venues, are we more likely to have more first-time winners or past major champions adding to their total?
We're at such an interesting place, too, with the young guys that came along 4 or 5 years ago. You think about Dustin Johnson. He's not young anymore. I mean, I'm not saying he's old, but he's not young anymore. He's in his 30s. Rory's in his 30s. Hasn't won a major since, 5 years ago now. The double from back then. You've got Spieth, who has gone 3 years winless, although he's been in contention in a number, but certainly hasn't finished one off. And Jason Day has a chronic back problem, which seems to prevent him from forming any kind of string of momentum.
Yeah, and I read that more and more people are commenting, people who are in the know, that back problem is not going to get better based on his swing mechanics. That there are things that he does that is going to aggravate that time and again. So he's sort of at a crossroads, I think.
Yeah, and that may be the case. And he may have to figure out a way to either just decide to work through it, kind of like Fred Couples tried to, rather unsuccessfully. Or does he try to change his golf swing? Well, there aren't a whole lot of people who have rebuilt from the bottom up and gotten back to the top, and there just aren't that many of them. Tiger is probably the noted exception. And you look at, so that's not going to get better. So we've got those four or five guys that we thought about, all right, they're going to win a whole boatload of majors in the space that we thought Tiger was going to evacuate, and now that space is occupied by Brooks Koepka, who I think will add to his tally. It's reoccupied by Tiger Woods, who conceivably could add to his tally. But then we've got these other up-and-comers who maybe aren't there quite yet to win a major championship. And I think about Matt Wolff. I think about Colin Morikawa. I think about Victor Hovland. Those are kind of the trio of guys probably people are going to focus on for the years to come.
Wait a minute. Are you looking at the questions in advance? The very next question is Colin Morikawa, Victor Hovland, Matthew Wolff. Of the three, which is the first to win a major, and do you think it happens this year? That hand of God.
Well, I'll segue into that. I think Victor Hovland is going to be the guy that stands out from those three in terms of long-term success, in terms of winning major championships. Just because Victor Hovland has the game, I think, that fits best for a major championship. He isn't the longest. That's Matt Wolff. He isn't the best at everything. He isn't the best ball striker. That's Morikawa. But he seems to have a way of managing his game in tournaments and playing third and fourth rounds better than any of the three, that he could either back into winning a major and not have to experience the pressure, or he would feel confident being the chaser in a major where he could go track down a two or three shot deficit and then peel one off. So I love Victor Hovland's game. I think he's going to be the guy that breaks through first among them. I know this may be a hot take, but I'm not as well convinced that Matthew Wolff is going to be a long-term prodigious winner on the PGA Tour. I think he could be like Dustin Johnson. He's so long, he can be dominant when he plays right. If he just putts okay, he's probably going to win. But how many times out of 100 is that going to happen?
Yeah, and so that's what I think about. I think I look at Wolf, and maybe it's because of the quirky swing, but I look at him and I think of Mickelson and I think of Arnold Palmer, and that those were two guys that when they got hot, you couldn't take your eyes off of them. And yep. they were dynamic. They were charismatic. And when Wolf is really on his game with that swing, and you know that swing's going to hold up under pressure because it's the only one he's ever had. So, right. You know, it's all a matter of him getting hot. But when he gets hot, I think, and Dustin may be a good analogy too, that you're just going to marvel at him. You're going to go, wow, why doesn't this guy win every week?
Yeah, that's what I think about with Dustin Johnson. When you see him play smooth golf, you go, how does he only win like once or twice a year? He should win all the time.
Yes.
And then you see him play in a major and you go, oh, I get it now. And I don't know Matthew Wolff's mental makeup in a major championship cauldron well enough, nor does anybody yet, to know what he's going to be like in that situation when he gets there. But I don't get the sense that he is the kind of guy that plays so consistently from week to week, unlike Victor Hovland, that Victor Hovland's going to rack up top 10 finishes like you won't even believe. He's going to make Rory's backdoor top 10s look ridiculous by comparison, I think. And that'll lead to wins because you just get yourself there. Dustin Johnson gets himself there and then kind of backs off. And I feel like that's kind of the way Matthew Wolff's going to be. And Colin Morikawa, he's just going to be so pure that if the putts go in, he wins. But he's got to figure out how to play better against better competition, because if you look at his limited record so far, weak fields, he's great. But against the better fields, he's still trying to feel his way out as to where his place is and if he can truly compete.
I agree. Ryan Ballingy with thegolfnewsnet.com is our guest taking Dead Aim. 10 predictive questions for 2020. John Rahm, Patrick Cantlay, Schauffele, and DeChambeau. Currently, those are the four guys in the overall World Golf Rankings top 10 who do not have a major on their resume. This yep. year, one, some, or none breakthrough?
I think Rahm gets his this year. He's such a prolific winner at this age. And I realize they're mostly in European tour events, but he's a prolific winner on their biggest stages. I mean, the Rolex series is his personal ATM, it seems like, since it was created a couple of years ago. And that's great because he's winning against their best fields. And most of those best fields have 10, 15, 20 top 50 players in them. And he's proving to himself he is better than them. He's world number three for a reason. I think that even though we're going to look back on it as maybe a backdoor finish, because it was, getting into the top five of the U.S. Open, I think, was a big deal for him. It proved that he could finish the tournament at that level of the leaderboard. You got to make that step, I think, for most people instead of just winning one. So I think he's got to feel tremendously confident in his ability to get there. He's the European Tour Player of the Year. He's the Race to Dubai winner. There's no reason for me to believe he can't do it. I think the others I have more skepticism about, because Patrick Cantlay seems to kind of waver in big moments. And I just feel like, and maybe I'm personally biased against him, I just feel like he doesn't have the game to finish off those big tournaments. Bryson DeChambeau has transformed his body in such a way that I don't think he's going to know what to do with it until June or July. I mean, he's still making changes. So is he going to be even bulkier or stronger or different than he looks now, having put on 20, 25 pounds?
Yeah, I guess I was unaware of this until I saw a picture of him the other day. And there are NFL tight ends who don't look like Bryson DeChambeau. I don't know what he's, who knows what he's thinking. But, I mean, he just, seriously, he looks like Greg Olsen of the Carolina Panthers. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and he has said his goal is to kind of look like a swole gymnast. I mean, he wants that kind of athletic type build, which is, that seems great for golf. I mean, there's pliability, there's strength, there's a lot that goes into that. And I think that's something reasonable to aim to. But when you transform your body, you're transforming your body in real time. It doesn't happen and then you go with it. It takes a while. So he's not at the end of his process yet. He's not in maintain mode yet, at least so it seems. So if he's not, then he's got to figure out his body and his mechanics and all the effects on that as we're going along. And maybe he's so smart, so much smarter than all of us, that he figures it out in the major championship this year while he's doing this whole body transformation. But I just don't think that's likely.
Well, we now have the title for this week's podcast. His goal is to be a swole gymnast. That is the title. Ryan, as he's just fallen out of the top 50 for the first time in more than two decades, victories for Phil Mickelson this year on tour. And again, I'm going to set the number at 1.5.
I'm going to go under. I feel like he entered official midlife crisis mode this year.
Yeah.
When he got into the whole thing about bombs and, you know, just wanted to hit it farther, and he went chasing swing speed, and he got it, by the way. He's hitting it as far as ever, if not farther. But the problem is, he's never been a great fairway finder, and he seems to care even less about that now because he's hitting it just as far as everybody else. And so unless he wants to start hitting accurate bombs, it's not going to really help him all that much. My thought is that, you know, he could still win tournaments. I mean, he won Pebble Beach. He won Mexico. He's won in consecutive seasons. That does count for something. But I just don't get the sense that he's honestly is interested in it. And whatever you think of his Saudi Arabia decision, that leads me to believe he's starting to think about his mortality. And one of the responses to the criticism about him was, this may well have been my last Phoenix Open. I'm going to get a chance to go play somewhere I've never played before. And whether that's a BS excuse or not, it seems to indicate to me that he thinks the sun has just about set on him. And if that's the case, then it might be kind of more desperation than confidence that he could win this year.
You know, Ryan, as a side note, Phil's going to turn 50 at the U.S. Open.
Yep.
Number of PGA Tour Champions majors that Phil plays in this year. I'll set that number at 1.5.
Man, that's a really good question.
I mean, I would not be surprised if he showed up at Newport Country Club for the U.S. Senior Open. I also wouldn't be surprised if he delayed his plane flight from the Open Championship a week and played in that one. I don't know if he's going to play in any more than that, but I could see him playing in those two.
I could, and I could also see him giving a big middle finger to both of them and just saying, nope, I'm not ready for that yet. I'm not old. I can still do it. And his relationship with the USGA is going to be really interesting moving here on out, because he's not going to be – I mean, there's a really good potential he's not exempt into the U.S. Open next year.
Wow.
If he's not exempt, does the USGA say, you know what, we're going to look the other way on you embarrassing us by walking after that putt and hitting it back, and we're going to give you an exemption? Or are we going to say, Phil, we'll see at sectionals? And I don't know if that's how that's going to go. And then even beyond 50, you know, like once he gets into that senior open qualification territory, does he want to offer the USGA the marketing of being able to say Phil Mickelson's playing in the Senior Open? And I don't know. I mean, Phil's kind of a spiteful guy. And maybe once he gets to the point where he's, you know, 50, 51, he's like, I'm not being smiley, cheery Phil anymore. I'm doing me, because that's what Saudi Arabia was about. I'm doing me. I want my seven-figure paycheck. I never took it. I'm getting it now. So does that mean he's going to do the same thing to the USGA and go, no, I don't want to play your event. I'm not going to give you the privilege.
I can't tell you how much I love the notion of Phil Mickelson having to go through sectional qualifying. That's spectacular. Ryan Ballingy is with thegolfnewsnet.com. He's our guest taking Dead Aim, 10 predictive questions for 2020. In 2016, all we heard about was how the Olympics weren't important, and golfers were coming up with excuses and reasons right and left not to play. This year, how big a deal is it going to be for the top players to openly pursue spots on their country's Olympic teams?
I think after the success of 2016, I think guys would look foolish, and women for that matter, although almost none of them skipped Rio, to not be interested. I mean, it looked good on TV. It was cool to see. golfers on an Olympic stage. And I think that the experience was good enough for both sides, both men and women, that the report back was, you know what, just do it. Don't come up with a lame excuse. Not that there's no Zika, so you can't just make it up this time. You can't just go, oh, a bug might bite me. I can't go.
Yeah, no, stop it. It's like, well, I was talking with Ron Cyrak earlier in the show. Look, they're going to Tokyo. That's going to New York City. Shut up.
Right, exactly. The best excuse you can come up with is, hey, is that nuclear stuff from the earthquake all secured? I mean, I don't want to inhale that. Like, that's the best you got.
Yeah.
So you have no excuse not to go. Golf was well-received. They're playing a really great host club. So it's not like it's an untested golf course. And again, you're going to a part of the world that I think most people, if you told them, hey, you can go to Tokyo for free, they would say yes. So I think that they will almost all clamor to be a part of it. And I think that that also kind of starts with Tiger saying, you know what, I do want to be on the American Olympic golf team. I do want to go play in that. That's one thing that's not on my resume, and I have probably one shot to do it. So, you know, it's going to matter that he could potentially overtake Patrick Cantlay and become the fourth American, because right now he's right on the edge. So I think for the most part, maybe with one or two exceptions, we're going to see every top player clamor to get into that qualification.
Ryan, the drumbeats for this continue to get louder and louder, and I know it's a subject you're very interested in. In 2020, would you be more surprised if golf's powers that be started to make moves towards equipment bifurcation, or more surprised if they didn't?
The dream scenario for me as someone who's pro rollback is let's do it. Like, I hope the distance report comes out, and then the same day they go, you know what, this is the smoking gun. We finally come to the conclusion that the ball goes too far for professionals. We're going to scale it back for them, and everybody else gets to use the same balls. But knowing how the USGA in particular feels about the concept of two sets of rules, I don't think they would never go in that direction, I don't think. I don't think they would ever say, we're going to have rules for amateurs and we're going to have rules for professionals. They just don't want to do that. So if they're going to do anything based on that, they're going to roll it back for everybody, which I think is a colossal mistake. I think if they roll back the game for every player, I think that creates a lot of problems for the sport among existing participants. For people who've never played, who don't know what it was like to play in 1995 versus 2020, who cares? They don't know the difference. But if you're someone who's played the game for that long or for, you know, any extended period of time and enjoyed the benefits of modern equipment, and the USGA and the RNA come in and say, we've got to take that away from you, sir or ma'am, I don't think that's going to go really well.
Yeah, look, I loved my Hogan Apex blades that I got in 1988. I loved them. I hit some great shots with them. They felt like butter. I'm 50 years old. I don't want to deal with a sweet spot the size of a dime ever again.
My Hogan Apex is from 2000, yeah, and I don't want to hit them.
Right. I'm very happy with what I'm doing right now.
Exactly. So if they're going to author a rollback plan, then the rollback has to be, it can't be 30 years. It can't be
right
to that era. We have to acknowledge that materials have changed and that design is better. And we have to acknowledge all of those things. And you could put a cap on performance. You can still do that with, you know, a physical number and without having to go back to Persimmon and Bellotta. But how well is that going to be received by the millions of people who play already? And if you're not playing competitively, are you just going to say, you know what, I don't care what you think, I'm going to go find on eBay the illegal golf ball,
right,
my illegal Pro V1s now, and play those? And I think people would do that. So there are a lot of consequences to weigh to what comes out of the distance report that has been put off a couple of different times. It's supposed to come out in 2020 by sometime, early 2020.
True or false, America takes back the Ryder Cup?
I'm going to say true. For as poor as their record has been in the last quarter century, they have done well at home. Obviously, they haven't won an away game since 1993. But if you look at their record at home, excluding the miracle at Medina or the meltdown at Medina, I guess from our perspective, they've been good enough at home to win. And I think if you look at where Europe is right now, they're strong as they're going to get. I mean, they're as strong as they've probably ever been at the top, with with Rory and Rom, and you've got Fleetwood in there, obviously. But if you look kind of beyond that, it's starting to get a little weaker and a little older. And you look at, you know, Matt Fitzpatrick, he's still kind of coming to his own. He's a young guy, but Poulter, probably not going to qualify. Francesco Molinari hasn't been the same since he lost the Masters. Henrik Stenson's in his mid-40s now. That might be a different thing for him. I mean, it's not all there. So I think between, you know, kind of having more weak spots underneath and the Americans having much stronger spots up top, I think they should be able to win under Steve Stricker.
All right, get you out of here on this. Ryan Ballingy with thegolfnewsnet.com, our guest taking Dead Aim, 10 predictive questions for 2020. Your bonus, a surprise or gut prediction, anything in the world of golf in 2020, what you got?
Well, Mike, the gut prediction I made last year when I don't even remember. There is audio evidence of this. I think I said the Internationals would win the President's Cup, and I think I'm going to come to regret that next week. So maybe this isn't the kind of best thing to come up with. But I think it's going to have to be related to, like, the TV deal, because there's so many unknown things right now, and we'll probably find out in a few weeks what's going to go on with that. But I have a feeling the TV landscape is going to change pretty dramatically in golf in 2021, 2022.
Oh, I could not agree more. I think by the time we are having this conversation a year from now, we will know what, like you said, we'll know what's going to happen, and we will be consuming the game of golf 70% differently than we ever have. I think there's just going to be a lot that goes down, and it's going to be seismic. We're going to see people who have been covering golf for 30 years who are no longer going to be covering golf. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot that shakes down.
There's a lot of change that's kind of boiling under the surface, and brands and publications are just trying to hang on, and some brands that are going to step into the limelight, maybe replace them a little bit, broadcast, print, whatever, you name it. But it's going to be really different a couple of years from now, how we consume the game. And I just leave it on this note that the PGA Tour announced this year that the players next year, you'll be able to watch every single shot from every single player in real time with cameras on every hole. That is coming to every PGA Tour event at some point in the future. Maybe not in 2020, but it's coming. And that's going to change how we view golf. Hardcore fans of you golf, and I think that's going to mean big things for the game.
So there you go, 2019 in the books, and what will happen in the world of golf in 2020? I can't wait. I'm sure I'm not the first, but hopefully will not be the last to wish you and yours nothing but the best and most prosperous new year imaginable. I'm blessed every week to share our passion for this game of golf with you, and look forward to continuing our weekly gatherings in the new year. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show, wonder what all we've covered today, no worries. Subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, BPod Studio, Spotify, all the usual podcast outlets, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Featured there now, links to articles on the latest goings-on in and around the game. And weather-wise, well, it's not going to get much better in December in the Carolinas to tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And, hey, if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.